This episode is brought to you by the American Homebrewers Association, a network of more than 40,000 people dedicated to the appreciation of beer, cider, and mead. Join the AHA for just $3.99 a month at homebrewersassociation.org. That's homebrewersassociation.org. This episode is also brought to you by Brewers Publications, publisher of Historical Brewing Techniques, The Lost Art of Farmhouse Brewing, by Lars Marius Garshall. Purchase your copy of Historical Brewing Techniques at brewerspublications.com. That's brewerspublications.com. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, September 24th, 2020. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, we head to Eureka Springs, Arkansas, to talk to Dave Hartman and Wendy Reese Hartman, who decided to leave the big brewery life behind and start Gotta Hold Brewing. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives for audio and video shows. If you go to basicbrewingshop.com, that's basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other basic brewing gear. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing, and many thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. And financial supporters have already seen the Basic Brewing video episode that I'm planning to post on Friday. It's the one where Steve Wilkes conducts a little experiment on a delicious dunkel that he brewed. It had been lagering for a few months, so he added bottle conditioning yeast at bottling time, but kept a few aside without the yeast. So we compare the two to see if adding yeast at bottling was necessary and what impact, if any, that it had on the character of the beer. That was a fun show. On the personal brewing front, I finally kegged my homebrew hard seltzer after adding more yeast and more energizer. The gravity finally fell to an acceptable level, so I added some mango natural flavoring to taste in the keg, and it's not horrible. I got to be honest, I'm not the biggest fan of the hard seltzers. I'm kind of in the Chris Colby camp on that one, but this is pretty tasty. And I'm looking forward to hearing what others say about it. I'd also like to take another stab at brewing hard seltzer one day just to see if I can make the process smoother next time. I also kegged what I guess I'm calling a Porchtoberfest. I brewed a smash beer with Vienna malt and Hallertau Mittelfrau, sort of inspired by Oktoberfest. But I pitched Imperial Pog. That's the Kveik strain, at 90 degrees Fahrenheit, or 32 C. And it sat out on the warm porch for the rest of that day, and it was very happy by the end of the day. It was fermenting very well. I did move it inside for the night because it was going to get chilly, and I wanted to maintain that higher temperature. It turned out really well. I do like that beer. It's definitely more of a pale ale than Oktoberfest, which you'd expect, probably. Nice and drinkable, with a lot of fruity notes, because of the yeast, I gotta think. Also, only 4.6% ABV, so nice and sessionable. Hey, you know, I mentioned Imperial Yeast, Imperial Pog. Speaking of our friends and sponsors at Imperial Organic Yeast, we're starting something fun together, a recipe of the month. I asked Casey if she'd be interested in getting together to post a recipe each month that calls for the featured yeast that we talk about, and she said, sure. Casey asked if we could do a cider recipe for this month because the featured yeast is A40 GF Bubbles. Imperial Bubbles is a traditional cider strain, beautiful for fruit juice-based fermentations. The clean profile of the yeast, especially when used at lower end of the temperature range, allows for the nuances of the fruit to be prominent in the finished bubbly beverage. A40 GF Bubbles is produced on 100% gluten-free media, so that's what the GF stands for. So I asked Steve Wilkes of stevesbrewshop.com to come up with a nice, straightforward, basic cider recipe, and Steve did a great job. If you go to basicbrewing.com/recipes, you can see the new section of the site where we're going to have those recipes of the month. Right now, there's only just the one, but you got to start somewhere, right? Check it out and ask your local homebrew store for A40 GF bubbles to make some delicious cider of your own. We love Imperial. My stir plate is dusty because I don't make starters anymore for moderate gravity 5-gallon batches. ImperialYeast.com. And Steve said also that he's going to work up a cider kit. You check out stevesbrewshop.com for that. And he wants to put bubbles in there. Let's take a look into the mailbag. Jeff from Southern New Hampshire writes, I was trying to explain the different types of hops and how and when you add them, or how when you add them can affect your brew to my friends that only make mead and cider. It's like a little theme going on here. In the end, I decided it was easier just to show them. I plan on doing a variation on your hop sampler, except I want to make 4 beers. 2 are made with a bittering hop, and the other 2 made with a, for lack of a better word, juicy hop. For each hop, 1 sample, I'll add the hops at the start of the boil, and the other I would do a hop stand. Jeff says, I'd have to modify your recipe to contain at least a 30-minute boil. I think at this point we're getting into your HSBU that you've tried to do away with. But do you think I should chase the dragon of keeping all the beers about the same bitterness, or just accept that those beers will have varying bitterness and hope I can still get my point across? Well, thanks, Jeff. Here's what I wrote back. I said, this is a really interesting question. I guess it depends on what you want to do. Each approach is going to end up with a completely different quote-unquote style, one being more traditional and clean, with the other being more juicy. It'll be a great opportunity to experience the character of the hops when treated so differently. I said if it were me, I don't think I'd try to keep the bitterness levels the same between the two approaches. You might overload the hop stand beers with hops, trying to match the predicted bitterness of the full boil beers. So I'd recommend treating each approach separately and exploring the differences, and you can always come back and change your approach in the next round. So I hope that makes sense. I hope that Jeff lets us know what he decides to do and what his mead and cider friends think about that. Speaking of mead and cider, it's a theme today. There's really a fun news from our friends and sponsors Ricky and Kelly at Groenfell Meadery. I told you last time that Ricky decided to resurrect the Chaos Sizer. It's been a while since they've brewed it. After I brewed it for a Basic Brewing video. Well, Chaos Sizer is now available for presale at groenfell.com. That's groenfell.com. And Ricky says it's going fast. So if you want some delivered to your door, you better hurry. Here's what Groenfell says about Chaos Sizer. Chaos Sizer is the perfect intersection of mead, cider, and magic. Well, assuming that you also refer to vanilla as magic, like we do. Our pairing of Northern European cider apples and vanilla creates a well-rounded and refreshing mead that's not too tart and not too sweet. If this Sizer is anything like all the other Groenfell meads that I've had, it will be delicious and very drinkable. Groenfell meads are fairly low in alcohol, at least for meads, carbonated and canned so that you can take them out into the great outdoors. Please recycle those cans. Pick out some and have them sent to you at family-owned and operated groenfell.com. That's groenfell. Okay, a couple weeks ago, I got some enthusiastic texts from our friend Alex Roberts, whom you've heard on this show. He was at this little new brewery in Eureka Springs called Gotta Hold, and Alex said Gotta Hold Brewing would make a great show. So Susan and I took his advice and headed to Eureka Springs. Well, Dave Hartman and Wendy Reese Hartman, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you.
Thanks, James. Thanks
and
for having us.
Feel free to move the... Wendy is the mic holder. We're separate here, and my wife, Susan, is observing and eating pretzels at the same time. So, yeah, feel free to do the Gene Rayburn, you know, from Match Game. Where are we at?
We are sitting out in the lovely beer garden under our enormous white oak here in Eureka Springs, Arkansas.
At Gotta Hold Brewing.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's kind of an important detail. I'm a little bit of an amateur at this part of the process.
No, that's okay. And we're going to be talking about beer, and I have a feeling that you know a lot about that. So, Gotta Hold Brewing. Why Gotta Hold Brewing?
Is that a question about the name or?
Yes.
Okay.
It could be something else too.
So the name came from, we were trying to find the right name, and you know, with 5,000 breweries in the United States, that becomes a little bit difficult. All of the names that we liked and had come up with were already taken in some form or fashion. And he had gone back to Vermont to close on our house, and I went out to have a beer at a local establishment and was introduced by some friends to their friends, and they said, well, what brought you here? And I said, to open a brewery. And for whatever reason, that night I decided to ask the same question back, and they said, well, this place just got a hold of us. And it was the third time that I'd heard it, and I knew it was very specific to Eureka Springs, and I knew in that moment that was the brewery name. So
well, there
this
you
place
go.
Just got a hold of us.
Inspiration. So what is it about Eureka Springs that that brought you here? Dave, you've got an extensive background in brewing all over the place. I've read your website, but why here?
Sure. I mean, we Wendy and I were looking for, we were looking to relocate. We were looking for some place that really felt more like us, and we came through here and really just fell in love with it very quickly. You know, additionally, I mean, we consider right out of the gates, we wanted to open a brewery here. The laws are pretty favorable, so you can do a tap room, you can self-distribute. Those are both things that are important to building a small brewery. You know, if you need to run through a distributor, if you can't do a tap room, it's very difficult to make money unless you're you know, much more sizable. And we really, you know, we don't want to be that big. We want to do what we want to do. We want to do it on a relatively small scale, and you know, maybe make a few bucks and have some fun. So yeah, I mean, it was a place we wanted to be, and it was a place that we felt like we could do what we wanted to do, which is where we're at right now.
And what about the culture of Eureka Springs?
So we did look at quality of life and where we wanted to be, and I'm an only child. I grew up in Oklahoma. My parents, my dad is still in Oklahoma, and I wanted to be closer to him, and we've since moved my mom out here. But I also wanted a place that my dad and his husband could feel safe. And Eureka Springs is definitely one of those places.
Yeah, Eureka Springs has got kind of a diverse population. You've got, you know, kind of the, you know, the hippie new age side of things. And then you've got, you know, some pretty conservative Christians as well. I mean, Carrie Nation at one point, you know, the axe wielding prohibitionist made this her home.
And we have a beer that it's named after Miss Nation.
Oh.
It's called Bury the Hatchet.
Well, we've got a lot of beers in front of me. Where should I start?
Yeah, so I would start with a grisette. So that is a grisette. It's a kind of a wheat based saison, probably the most subtle of the flavors that we have. So you definitely get a little bit of that Belgian yeast character, phenolics, clove, maybe a little bit of bubblegum. It's dry hopped, but in a very subtle way. So it's light, and that the yeast is one of those that'll. It's a diastaticus yeast, so it'll ferment it real dry. So it gives it a nice dry, crisp finish.
But it's not so dry that it's, I mean, there's enough mouthfeel to get.
Yeah, it's not bone dry, but it's a nice, light, refreshing beer. Carbonation, you know, might be a little off because it's been sitting there for a moment, but that's the one that we have brought. I felt that the carbonation being a little higher was the most important, so it's got
and Grisette's kind of a heritage style that has seen a resurgence recently.
Sure. And there's, you know, like anything else in the Saison, you know, kind of category, there's different interpretations of it. But Yeah, I mean, for us, I predominantly like wheat malt and unmalted wheat, and we used a little bit of buckwheat as well to give it some different notes. And the Saison yeast and just, you know, kind of a lighter. I mean, you know, I mean, this lineup reflects that we started making beer at the beginning of the summer, and so most of them are actually on the lighter side, but that is the lightest and driest and crispest. And you know, we get a lot of folks that wander in and they're wondering, you know, they're Bud Light drinkers or whatever, and that actually works pretty well for them. You know, it's got a little bit of flavor but not too much, and it's, you know, I think there's not a lot of bitterness, there's not a lot of I don't know, it's a nice light beer because it's got a good flavor to it from the yeast and from the hops, but it's, you know, there's not that much, so it's very refreshing.
So is there barley in there as well?
Sure, yeah. It's probably about 50% barley malt, and then the balance is wheat, unmalted wheat, and wheat malt, and buckwheat, and I think there might have been rye in there too.
Wow. Just to kinda... So a pretty could be a challenging wort. That's a lot of gloppy.
Yeah, it was definitely. Well, stuff. I used, you know, I threw some rice hulls in there for lautering. It was. It was not the easiest louder, for sure.
I've done some 100% wheat beers and some 100% rye beers, and with brew in a bag. And
okay.
It gets pretty sticky.
Yeah, rye is worse than wheat, huh? Rye is very hard to work with.
Oh, yeah.
It's just very, very sticky.
I can tell you some stories.
I don't know. I feel like wheat malt is really just a question of the husk, no, lack of husk. But that rye, there's just so much beta-glucan in there. It's just, like, sticky.
But again, I'm surprised with all of those kind of gloppy or potentially gloppy ingredients. It is very dry. I mean, it's not. What's the gravities?
I don't remember. I don't recall the specific. I mean, that's under 5% alcohol. It's like 4.8? So it would have started. I feel like it started just below 12 and finished, you know, at like 1.5 or something in the Plato scale.
Very nice.
Correctly.
So talk about, you've got a long story about your brewing background.
Okay.
So Wendy's going to hand you the mic. So talk about your extensive brewing background.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I've been in the brewing industry since 1992. So long enough that I recall the days when convincing people to drink craft beer was a lot harder. You know, so back then, almost all beer was, you know, Bud, Miller, Coors. I first worked at a company called Long Trail in Vermont, right out of college, took a degree in engineering and, you know, kind of didn't really want to do engineering after a little bit, and, talked my way into a job at a brewery, and, you know, it was brewing and running the bottling line and, you know, all hands on deck. And on the weekends, we'd go to try and go to fests or try and go to bars and talk people into drinking our beer. And I mean, people would be, you know, the fact that the beer was red was, you know, novel and weird, and people would be turned off by it. Back then, all beers were filtered, so they're brilliantly clear, those days are obviously gone. I mean, it's a much better atmosphere today, that everybody's at least aware of craft beer. You know, we still, like I said, we still get a lot of people that come in and they're Bud Light drinkers, or they drink, you know, their favorite beer is Miller, Michelob Ultra, or Mick Ultra. Is that the one that's really super light?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. But you know, people know what craft beer is. So, you know, it's not.
Yeah, we're drinking Grisette in Eureka Springs.
That's right. So from there, I worked there for a year and a half and then decided, this is what I want to do, but I really have no idea what I'm doing. I need to take some education. So I went out to UC Davis, went through the Master Brewers program. I was out there for a year, worked in a brewery in California for a bit, came back. I worked in a brewery in upstate New York. I did some consulting and startups for a bit. I ended up in Minnesota for a little while, then I was in Germany for a spell, and came back to the States and ended up back at Long Trail, actually, you know, many years later, 20 years later, I guess, and it was, you know, by then had grown, it was a much bigger brewery, we did probably 150,000 barrels at the max, over two breweries, so I was running that brewery, and it was great. I mean, it was mostly management at that point, though. Like, I had 30 people that worked for me, and we, you know, so we had a bottling team and a brewing team and a cellars team and a maintenance team, quality team. After about 8 years of being back there, like, trends started to change, you know, and the thing that really changed is the thing that I kind of brought up at the beginning of the laws, you know. So it used to be like when I started out, you had to sell through the three-tier system, you know. I know that just changed out in Oklahoma, changed here not that long ago. And that's really a game changer, because we can do 500 barrels a year here and probably make money on it. Or maybe even less than that. You know, there are places that, depending on how you set yourself up. And, for a startup back in the day, when you needed to run through the three-tier system, it was more like 5,000.
Wow.
Yeah. And, a lot of the things that you wouldn't necessarily think are important in that change are. So because we're not really distributing at all. I mean, I dropped off some kegs, but I mean, they're kegs, they stay cold. I know they're going to get consumed in like a couple of weeks. The quality control can be very vastly different than it would be if I were shipping case after case of bottles into 13 states, you know, and the shelf life is, you know, needs to be at least 4 months. I mean, a lot of what we focused on at Long Trail, when it was a bigger brewery, is making sure the beer was good in 4 months. We really just need to make sure it's good now, you know, like right now. If it tastes good in that glass, it is good. And, you know, that's a lot simpler. Really, like, because we kind of cut out the middlemen, so we're selling directly to consumers instead of the wholesaler taking a cut and the other retailer taking a cut, we get that entire, you know, the entirety of it. So we can be profitable at a much smaller scale. You know, and it opens up a lot of other things too. If you're working for a bigger company, I mean, they're by nature just much more conservative. Wholesalers are conservative. Like, if you do a grisette, like, no one knows what the hell that is. And they don't want to deal with it. They don't want to try and explain it to bars because it's confusing. It's like, they don't even know how to pronounce it. But we can do a great job of selling it because people are coming to us, and it's Wendy and I and one other employee in the tap room. So the experience for the consumer is also way better. You know, so if you're coming directly to the brewery, you can actually interact with the owners and the brewers. And we will give you tastes, and we can explain exactly how the beer was made. So everything about the experience of coming to a small craft, you know, mom and pop craft brewery like this is just, we think, much better. You know, it's a much better. And I think what you'll see is that places like this will just continue to, you know, so the number of breweries will continue to grow and grow, because you could have three breweries like this in this town. Like, you could easily support it, and you could have 20 in Fayetteville, you know, and so on and so forth. I mean, it's a much better way of doing business, I think.
What should he try next?
Sorry. I was blabbing
on.
Yeah,
for a guy who doesn't like to talk.
No kidding, right? Kept me ripping, and jeez. I would probably go with the Keller, which is going to be this guy right here. So it's a unfiltered German lager. That is something that I, you know, in my time in Germany, the story that I told, that, you know, there were different kind of names for them. They called them Zwickel beer sometimes, which is, the Zwickel is like the little sample valve on the tank, or they call it ungespundet, which is like unbunged in translation, and it really kind of refers to a lower carbonation level. But the idea was that the brewers would actually sneak into the beer cellar and get pints out of the tanks, you know, and they would, I don't know if it was because they were cheap and they didn't want to pay or, you know, but they said that they liked the beer better. It was fresher, you know, so filtering it takes some of the flavor and some of the character out of the beer. So we wanted to, you know, it's kind of like this is a version basically of a Helles, like a German Helles, but unfiltered and, you know, kind of a little lower carbonation and,
It's unfiltered. You say it's unfiltered, but it's
fairly bright. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing of it is, you put it in a keg, and it's on keg for, you know, on tap for a week or so.
Right.
It'll start to brighten up.
It's very nice. Very malty. talk about the malt bill and talk about the
sure.
recipe a bit.
Yep. Yeah. So German malt. You know, Weyermann Maltings was actually right down the road from where I lived in Germany, and I used to go and hang out with them, and I use a lot of their malt. But yeah, it's 100%. I think it's 100% Weyermann Pilsner malt, if I recall. Or I think I might have put in a little bit of. I take that back. There's a little bit of Vienna malt in there, just to kind of build that little bit of toasty undertones for it, and a Munich lager yeast and Hallertau. I think it's all Hallertau. I mean, the hopping's pretty subtle, just enough to balance it. And yeah, pretty simple malt bill and pretty simple recipe. But you know,
what's your lagering fermentation schedule like?
I mean, we do 4 week lagers here, longer if I can pull it off. That one was, you know, we started at 48, and I'll typically let it run up to about 54 or so at the end, just to give it 2 to 3 weeks in the bright tank or the secondary, I guess. So usually I'll let it ferment out mostly, try and drop most of the yeast, and then transfer it to a secondary and let it finish up.
There's a lot of discussion nowadays about whether it's necessary to ferment at the cooler temperatures or not, and it may depend on the yeast strain, and it may depend on, you know, a lot of other things.
I've had some very good lagers that were made surprisingly, you know, they'll make, like run them at like 58, something like that, and just run the whole process in about 2 weeks, and they're pretty good. I think you can run into flaws though. Like I've seen breweries that are kind of doing that, and sometimes you'll run into like diacetyl issues or something like that, because you're kind of rushing it, I guess.
You know? Yeah. If you don't let the yeast get finished, it's.
the brewery where I worked at in Germany, like the beer was the lagers were unbelievably good, but they were doing like very, very traditional. So open primary fermentation, everything was Kreisened. So they're running approximately filling the lager tank to about 2/3 full, and then they'd top it up. The last third would be that was finished. That was, you know, kind of, they'd let it finish in primary, and then they'd have a batch that was about half finished, and then they'd use that for a Kreuzening, and you get a good like active secondary fermentation, and you know, but they were, I mean, six week lagers, naturally carbonated. They're awesome. You know, I would love to emulate that process, and you know, it's more expensive, and you know, you can run them quicker, but I don't know that it's really that important to be able to run them that much quicker. You know, it's
if you've got the space,
yeah,
for the scheduling.
The tanks aren't that expensive, you know. Ultimately.
So, Wendy, first, what beer should I be sipping on next while I ask Wendy this question?
I would probably go into the Belgian Wit, which is going to be not that one, but the one
one
right there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break from sampling to hear a word from our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. If you go to highgravitybrew.com, you'll see their fall and winter seasonal kits are now available. You've got your Exaltation Christmas Ale, Ichabod Pumpkin Ale, Northern Lights Winter Ale, and Old St. Nick Ale. Old St. Nick was inspired by Avery's Old Jubilation Ale with mocha and toffee flavors and a hint of hazelnut. Mmm! And Old St. Nick has the option of adding nth ingredients to take your beer to the nth degree. For example, as an option, you can add several different kinds of oak chips and spirals, cacao nibs, and various fruit purees. If you buy two or more ingredient kits at highgravitybrew.com, you automatically get 10% off at checkout. High Gravity makes great kits, and most, if not all, have been tested in Pippin's Tap Room at High Gravity. Check it all out and get your cold weather beers brewing at family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. That's highgravitybrew.com.
So, Wendy... I read on the website that y'all are both certified Cicerones.
We are, and so is Kelsey Johnson, our lead bartender.
Wow. And why was that important?
Well, we want to be able to educate people on beer. We knew, you know, not to say this to sound derogatory about Arkansas in the brewing scene, but we recognize that it's quite a bit behind the rest of the country in terms of what people are drinking. And we, every day that we're open, we have people come in and say, what do you have that's like Busch Light? Or what do you have that's like Mick Ultra? And we realize there's a lot of education here to get people from drinking something that is pretty mild, basically flavorless beer to beers that we enjoy that have quite a bit of flavor. Even in what you were tasting earlier, the quote lightest beer we have, the two lightest beer we have a lot of flavor to them. And so we wanted to be able to know that we could educate people and to be able to know the beers ourselves as well as Dave does, who has extensive background in brewing.
Yeah, and so what did you think was the most useful part of that training?
Oh, all of it? I mean, I can't really say that there's any one particular thing that was more, because it is so holistic, from glassware to beer styles, and all of it that is really important. And I mean, you're drinking, we served this particular tasting in our half pints. However, they are still wine glasses. And all of the glasses that we have chosen for God Hole Brewing have been very intentional for those styles of beer, but they're not necessarily traditional glassware for that particular beer style. So, but I think it's important to understand what's a beer clean glass. I mean, how many places have we been to? And it's fun to watch people go, what is that? When we rinse a glass and they say, what are you putting in there? Just water, just getting that, getting off any of the sanitizer that's still on it, because that will affect your beer. So yeah, all of it was pretty important.
The Belgian wit's very nice. It's
thank you very much.
It's spicy. I mean, it's got a spice character. How much of that is actual spice and how much of that is the yeast?
So we did use a wit yeast, you know, so it did throw off. I don't know, it's funny, like she gets more of it than I do, but there's a bit, you can definitely get a bit, almost a bit of banana, and there's clove, yeah. Like almost like a Hefeweizen.
Yeah.
That was unintentional, but I think it kind of works pretty well, but it was, I guess I'd say it's probably 75% of it is, you know, it's coriander and orange peel. I hit it with a little bit of chamomile just to give it a little interesting, okay, and extra. But, you know, it's subtle. It'd probably be hard to, I don't even know if I, you know, you can pick it out if I told you, but, and yeah, but you definitely get a little bit of that clovey on the back end, and there's some fruity notes that are obviously from the yeast.
Yeah. What'd you think, Susan?
I think it smells great. And it tasted good, too, but I could smell that, like, in a candle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, y'all need to do candles.
In our spare time.
Yeah. So what's next? I would probably, let's get into the IPAs. Yeah, ooh, IPAs. Ooh. So the, all the way on the front, yep, that guy, that's our pale ale.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so dry, you know, pretty heavily dry hopped. It's, I don't know. I mean, I guess, like, you know, look at it as sort of like if you were to, I mean, Sierra Nevada was a beer that I've drank a lot of along the way. And it's, if I were to, you know, make something like that, but with today's technology and hops, you know, so like lower alcohol, it's 4.6 ABV, decent, but yeah, decent mouthfeel, decent hop, you know, hop feel, flavor, solid bitterness.
Mm-hmm. It's very nice. It's very, very clean.
So that's a 4.6% alcohol, and even though it's more of a session style, there's a lot of flavor to it, which mm-hmm. is really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not chunky.
No. looking for a nice clean.
Yeah, a lot of pale ales, including ones that I've made lately, have been, you know, kind of chunky, you know, and this is kind of more of a classic,
sure,
American pale ale, nice and clean and bright. Both in the appearance and in the flavors as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's the bitterness is not intimidating. I'm looking at Susan; she's usually not a fan of the bitter beers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in terms of bitterness perception, that is probably that and there's a double IPA are the ones that have the highest. So we do have the next one I'd recommend is that one right there is our hazy.
Bury the hatchet.
So
cheers to Ms. Nation wherever she is.
Yep. So, I mean, New England style, dry hopped in a couple increments during and at the end of the fermentation. You know, kind of fruitier. It's heavy on Amarillo, which gives you that sort of linalool, fruit loopy, and smooth, you know, like definitely the bitterness. It's probably pretty similar to the pale ale, but, you know, obviously the perception is lower. It's a higher gravity beer. So the you know, looking for a lower bitter perception, but a good amount of hop flavor.
What's your hopping strategy for that beer? I mean, there's, and your strategy in keeping it hazy. Because
yeah, I mean, so the hazy is mostly the malt bill. I mean, use a good amount of wheat and unmalted wheat, which just tends to throw a lot of protein into the mix that just doesn't want to drop out. And then it's dry hopped. I mean, I'll put as much hop as I can in the kettle, but there are practical limits on that in terms of if you put too much in, everybody knows what happens. You can't get anything out of it.
They're wort sponges.
Yep. Exactly. And then it'll actually get dry hopped about halfway through the fermentation process. And, you know, the theory there is the yeast will. And this is, you know, this is kind of a newer thing that's come around in the last few years, but the yeast will actually metabolize and release some flavor components from the hops at the
biotransformation.
Exactly. So you're aware. That's kind of a thing, and it seems to work. You know, it makes it harder to crop your yeast, but it's yeah, that's something that works, and then we'll once the yeast drops out, I'll hit it with some more hops and just kind of rouse it and get that last bit of flavor and aroma in.
So you're accepting the haze?
Yeah, I'm okay with it. It's very clear to me. We did a lot of work looking at this when I was at Long Trail that those haze particles act as like carriers for that flavor and aroma. You know, because it's very difficult to get hop oils to disperse and dissolve. Like, they don't really want to dissolve. Like, you can sort of emulsify them into the beer, kind of. But those, you know, sort of floating proteins and just the solids that are in there, I feel like act as a carrier for some of those flavor compounds and components. So, yeah, there's definitely something to the hazy IPAs that, you know, there's you can just pack more flavor into them.
Hmm. And they are tasty. I mean, they've you know, had a lot of resistance, over the past few years from, of course, some brewers have gone too far, in my opinion, with the, you know, some of the milkshakier beers.
Yeah,
but,
I don't know. I mean, it's about the flavor for me, really, and that's where I come down on it. Like, and if I can put more flavor in the beer because it's hazy, then I'm down with doing that. I'm not about making it hazy for the sake of making it hazy. You know, it's what the beer tastes like. I mean, the beer obviously doesn't look as nice, but that is what it is. I think one of the other things that's kind of, there's some resistance to it. And I certainly for us at Long Trail, we just didn't think it was going to be consistent. So if you've got, I mean, you know, we saw with the Belgian White, for instance, that was a lot hazier, you know, when I put it in the keg, you know, but that stuff just doesn't want to stay, you know? So it becomes a consistency problem, you know, and also those beers are super, super delicate, you know? So if you put that in a bottle and ship it and it gets warm and, you know, sits on the shelf for a few months, it's terrible, you know? So, again, like, advantage to the small brewer because we can do it on a small scale. It never warms up, you know, and like we can control how quickly we run through it. And they're beers that are really tailored. They're difficult to do on a larger scale and pull off effectively. You know, like a beer like an amber ale or like a fairly neutral in flavor beer that doesn't have a lot of those delicate hop flavors, you can have a decent shelf life with, but like a hazy IPA, just you can't. You know, a month is probably almost too much.
Yeah. What's next?
Probably the DIPA.
Yep. So, right there.
This one? My friend Alex, who texted me enthusiastically from here the other day, and said, you got to come up and interview them, and I want to come too.
Nice.
Unfortunately, he had to take his dog to the vet today. So, but he said to bring him back some of this. So
okay.
We'll have to.
So again, that one, pick some that one, you know, kind of more traditional double IPA. So not I didn't go out of my way to make that one hazy, but is obviously very heavily dry hopped. Again, multiple stages, and you know, like a full. There's a bit more of a malt presence to it as well, you know, just to give it some backbone to carry that bitterness and those hop flavors.
It's a little more caramely mm-hmm. compared to other things that we've been tasting.
Yep. Yeah, and, which I just think kind of works with that kind of beer. Well, with that, I don't know. I've had a lot of double IPAs like that I enjoyed. I mean, I'm sure we'll do a lot of double IPAs here, but that's a kind that I, you know, that's sort of. You know, when the double IPAs first started blowing up on the scene, like, you know, there were a few that I really liked that were, you know, kind of like that. So it's a little bit of an homage to some beers that I've had in the past, which.
Yeah, it's nicely balanced, but there's a, what I like about the double IPA is not big alcohol and big bitterness. I like the kind of candy, you know, character that comes from the hops and from the malt together. And there's, mm-hmm. it's not a super sweetness, but there's a touch of sweetness in there. But what do you think?
I like it. It's good. It's not too bitter.
Yeah, that's an endorsement right there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the days where you would brag about how many IBUs you put in the beer are over, and I'm glad of that because I felt like that was, largely it wasn't true. I mean, there are breweries that were bragging about 120 IBUs, which is close to impossible to really achieve. And if you would test them, like, you know, I mean, they're high. It'd be like 80 or 90, which is probably too many, but... it was, you know, it was like a competition to see how many IBUs you could put on the label, and that didn't really, I don't know, that, and you know, and the high alcohol I also don't really get. I mean, I've seen a few double IPAs in the market that are like 11%, and it's not, you know, the flavor isn't like there's much more flavor in that than you know, regular IPA, and you can kind of carry it because you've got that malt, and you've got sort of, I mean, the alcohol's, I mean, I think part of it too. Probably at that level helps to get some of the hop oils, essential oils, that emulsify.
It's a solvent.
Yeah, exactly.
So where do we stand on the ABV on this one?
8.1.
Okay.
Which is, you know, yeah. I mean, that's right in the ballpark. I don't like to go too much more than that. Yeah. It doesn't really add any character to the beer, in my opinion.
I did I miss the Black is Beautiful?
You did, but we can send you with a can.
We have a few cans left.
Oh, yeah, because I made it myself, and I just want to compare. Crisis in Fayetteville also made it.
Yeah.
And theirs was really good.
I think y'all were the only two in the state.
Gravity is releasing theirs in October. So Tony is our Arkansas Brewers Guild president, and they will be releasing it. So that will be the only three that did it. Ours is notably different from Crisis. And I think both of them are really, really great. They're just different. Dave made a couple of changes, and I should let you talk to the recipe about it, but a couple of changes to it that, for me, I got a very, very dark chocolate note, a little bit of roastiness, but it was so smooth that, unlike any other 9% alcohol beverage I've ever had, it went so smooth that it was almost dangerous. It was really great. And he let me brew with him on that one, and it was quite an honor for me.
Nice. So where should we go next?
One right there is called Citruspective.
Citruspective. Now, while I'm sampling this, talk about your system. We haven't talked about your brewing system.
Sure. Okay. We're running a 7-barrel system here. We bought it from Craft Kettle down in New Orleans. It's nice. I mean, it's a nice small system. It's got enough bells and whistles that I can kind of, you know, I can set some alarms, and it tells me how much, like, I've got a flow meter on the lautering side, so it tells me when the kettle is about to be full, so I can kind of walk away and do a couple other things and, you know, kind of tune back in when I need to. steam fired system, which is a little weird for a system that small, but it seemed to make sense for, well, for various reasons, it made sense for us to put in a boiler. But it's making good beer for us. You know, we have four primary fermenters. We have two secondary / bright tanks. And we have a couple fooders on order. We're doing some barrel aging. So I've got some spirit barrels in there. And I've got a couple wine barrels. There's more wine barrels that are going to be coming in. So we're going to be doing... So like a whiskey barrel stout, and also spirit barrels for barley wine, and then we'll be doing, you know, kind of long age, funky Brett sours as well in barrels. So, yeah, that's, I don't know, those are beers that we really love, and I think they'll be a little bit of a harder sell here, but.
well, you can make small batches though. That's the
thing. Yeah, kind of. Yeah. I mean, the good news about those things is that they also. You know, you worry a little bit less about the shelf life, you know, so like a whiskey barrel stout, in bottles, you know, actually ages very gracefully. So I don't, you know, if we don't sell it all in a month or something, that's fine.
Talk about this beer. This is nice. What do you think? She's not, Susan likes this one.
Mm-hmm. So
she's not generally a fan of sour beers, but yeah. this one is,
it's not super sour. So
yeah, it's not,
we do,
not as challenging, I mean, as
we've
others.
Got a couple sours on right now. They're both kettle sours. So, a little bit of lactic fermentation in the kettle overnight. That one I didn't really want it to be overly sour. So it's kind of like a low to medium, lactic character, and then cooked it. I really like the way that, and it's very heavy on Citra hops, you know, so, and I get that in the aroma, like I get lemon, I get orange, and then the finish is very grapefruit to me. Like you just get a lot of that, almost like that grapefruit bite of the fruit and the grapefruity flavors. And it just kind of expresses itself really well as like a number of citrusy flavors. And, that's actually probably the only beer that we came up with a name after we made it and drank it. I think all the other ones we had kind of smarmy names kind of just hanging around that we decided to attach to them. But yeah, I really like the way it plays out. It's not super sour, but there's a little bit of a tartness to it. And you know, the hops, there's a lot of hoppy flavors that come across as very citrusy.
I get a little bit of juicy fruit, you know, somewhere in the, mm-hmm. in the, whether it's the way the hops are playing, you know, with the sourness and all that, there's just, I don't know, it just tickled a note in my brain for juicy fruit gum.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay. It's good. Very good. So is it kind of like going home brewing, since you brewed in such, you know, larger breweries, is it kind of like,
well, it's definitely much
freedom?
More it's yes, it very much is. I mean, we're, yeah, I'm like, I'm super excited to be just back in the brew house doing, you know, I mean, I pretty much do everything myself, which is nice. You know, I mean, when I was running a bigger brewery, it was a lot of like writing schedules and dealing with personnel, and that was great too. I mean, working with people is important. But yeah, just making the product is really, really terrific. It feels great to, yeah, I mean, I'm the kind of guy that really likes to sweat details, you know. I mean, we can probably move on. Well, I mean, maybe we'll do that last, but that coffee brown, like, I would actually probably try the Oktoberfest first.
Oh, Oktoberfest.
Just out of like preserving your palate, but you know, sweating the amount of coffee or you know, just the amount of chocolate that we added or cinnamon, you know, like how do we get that or that one, you know, it's obviously Oktoberfest is a really nice clean malty product, but you know, I wanted to do it like a slightly untraditional recipe. So what's too much malt? Like what'll throw it over the edge? And yeah, I mean,
but the roast really jumps out on your nose
mm-hmm.
on that one. It is a little
chewy,
a little more substantial mouthfeel than I've been drinking Lost 40s, Oktoberfest
Hunter, which is great. It's a
very drinkable beer.
Yeah.
That one's more chewy, and but man,
it's more substantial, I guess. And,
really
and not
good.
Not that they're, I mean, their beer is great. Like I think there's a lot of interpretations of that style, and I think they can all be great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had There's a, I mean, a lot of breweries here make, I think most of the breweries make Oktoberfest, and I think that the vast majority of them are good, but they're all different, and I kind of wanted ours to be the chewiest, maltiest one.
I think you hit it. So what was the, what's the key to that? I mean, how did you get it so chewy?
Yeah, so heavy on Munich malt, and then there are a few other things. I mean, I a little bit of brown malt, a little bit of caramel malt, and you know, like kind of a dark crystal malt.
What was the level bond of the Munich? Do you remember?
10 level bond.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's the base. That was the base malt for it.
Right. Okay.
And I think there's a little bit. I think I blend. You know, it looked like it was going to be a little bit over the top, so I blended in a little bit of Pilsner malt just to kind of, you know, I don't know, smooth it out a little bit. But by and large, it's a Munich malt based beer with a little bit of higher roast notes thrown in there for accents.
Boy, it's nice. I could drink this style all year round.
I know it's an interesting. Like I wrote a little bit about it. Like it's such a. I mean, a lot of the other things that we do are so complicated. You know, like okay, I've got to put the dry hops in, like, you know, like at weird intervals, and there are the multiple. You know, so we're doing kettle souring, and there's just multiple fermentations, and it's a simple beer. It's malt and hops and yeast. And the yeast is mostly in the background. We went with the Anger yeast, which gives a kind of a nice, seems to throw off a nice malty, or like leave the beer very nicely malty. But yeah, I mean, if you taste any of the yeast signature, really, like that's kind of not what you're trying to get with a lager. So it's a very, very simple style, and yeah, super accessible. Like I almost think it's surprising, yeah, that somebody isn't like making bank with selling a beer like that all year round and just calling it like, I don't know, whatever lager.
And there's some people on Twitter who are like, Oktoberfests are out already. You know, they're all mad.
Yeah, but they do tend to come in. The seasonals, you know, if you're, I mean, that was another thing I didn't like about the bigger brewery thing is like you're trying to get your seasonals to come out before the next guys. Yeah, so the Oktoberfests tend to come out in like July, I feel like. You know, and it is kind of a shame, you know, because I think, I mean, ours is coming out today. Like, so the Oktoberfest, they're not doing the Oktoberfest in Munich this year, but it would have started Saturday, would be the tapping of the first keg. So we timed it for that. But yeah, I mean, a lot of people have already had Oktoberfest for like 2 months, right? So like, do we miss the season? You know, like
just call it Marzen Oktoberfest and have it all year round. So
yeah, no doubt. But I think that was like, you know, that was kind of a, so that's the, I guess you got the coffee brown.
The coffee brown. And we've been talking for a long, for a guy who doesn't like to talk, Wendy. He's
yeah, you do some talking.
So our coffee brown, what is interesting is New Java Coffee was purchased by Belen Ariola, who moved the coffee roaster into our building when we acquired the building and got it ready for her. She opened just a few weeks before we did, and it was fun to come in one morning and to watch her and Dave picking out which coffee was going to go into it. And then the next day, she was roasting the coffee as he was brewing the beer, and then he took that freshly roasted coffee and put it into the fermenter. And I think it's just an amazing beer, but Mexican Buddha is its name, and that is Blinn's Appalachian Trail hiking name. We hiked together on the Appalachian Trail, and so that we wanted to name a beer that honored her. There's a lot of flavors in there that's like the Mexican hot chocolate, the cinnamon and the chocolate with that coffee, and it's light enough. It's a dark beer, but it's light enough that it can be enjoyed in the heat of Arkansas, because we know our falls here can be up and down in the temperature range, and so it could be really, really chilly tonight, but then tomorrow it may be 85 degrees back here. So that's something that can hold up in any of those circumstances.
It's very nice, and that there, it's incredibly complex, and I'm glad that it's warm. Mm-hmm. That's one benefit of talking a long time when there's beer sitting in front of you. There's a whole lot going on. Like you said, there's chocolate, there's roastiness, there's you want to weigh in? You sampled a bunch of the she's eating pretzels now.
It's really good.
Yeah, she likes the dark roasty beers. Yeah, so does this bee.
We hit it with a little bit of cacao in the brewing process, and then it was, just to kind of highlight those chocolatey notes. But yeah, pretty traditional brown ale. Besides that, and then some coffee as like a dry beaning or something, you know, after the ferment, and just a little bit of cinnamon in there with that. So yeah, it's an interesting group of flavors that I think works pretty well. And yeah, again, it was, you know, with the time we brewed it was, I think, beginning of August or something when we put it on tap. So, you know, kind of the hottest time of year. We've actually been surprised how many people have asked for dark beers, you know. You know, people, I don't know, there's a lot of people that come in and say they do not like IPAs, which turns out not to be true because they don't like certain IPAs, but we typically get them to try one that they like. But are interested in dark beers, even in the middle of the summer. And, you know, I don't know, maybe it's something a little bit different about the market down here or what, but I've been in, you know, I've worked in a lot of different places, and this is one where there's a lot of people who are really into dark beers. So I'm sure we'll do a lot of them. I like them too. I tend to like them in the cooler months.
Yeah. Yeah. But a good beer is good anytime for me.
agreed. Yeah. Yeah. There's just, I think, you know, I myself will tend to kind of drink myself out on certain styles at different times of the year, you know, you get these really big stouts and then, I don't know, then I'm kind of done with them for a little while. And like Oktoberfest, I'll probably drink way more than I should have it for the next, you know, few months, for next few weeks or something. And then suddenly I won't be that into Oktoberfest anymore. And you drink yourself off of it.
Well, this has been a lot of fun. I'm glad that Alex recommended that we come up. I appreciate you guys. And this will not be the last time that we come.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for coming out.
Thanks again to Dave and Wendy. Sorry we missed seeing Alex, but I did bring him some double IPA, and I also brought back some Oktoberfest, the Belgian Wit, and Gotahold's version of the Black is Beautiful beer, which they've since sold out of, so congratulations to them. We will be back to Gotahold. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.